Hello and welcome to the 47 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1 Baseball Podcast. We are brought to you by our great friends at Driveline Baseball. Driveline offers a variety of training, education, software, and hardware solutions for both players and coaches. Coaches, if you're overwhelmed by collecting different data sources, mass athlete programming, third-party analytic insights, I don't blame you. 30 years ago, I was overwhelmed by just trying to get the dang stats onto a computer. Well, here's what you do. Call or email into support@drivelinebaseball.com. Get yourself set up with a custom player development bundle on Driveline's track platform. Look into a Driveline certification that'll empower you to run Driveline type training, pitch design, and or biomechanical data collection with products like Modus. We are so appreciative of our friends from Driveline. And boy, is that an appropriate sponsor for what we got today, Fitzy. So I am Michael Patrick Rooney from the fighting city of Newtown Square, Pennsylvania, joined as always by Aaron Fitt. And Fitzy, our special guest today, and this is a special pod, is the great Alan Jaeger of Jaeger Sports, Jaeger Bands, the J Bands, if you will. Coach Jaeger, how are we doing? It is just an absolute joy to see your face and speak with you today.
Runes and well, I'm going to go with Fitzy now. You know, it's Aaron to me, but we're going to go with Fitzy now because it's just par for the course. But look, can you see the smile?
Yes.
You can't make this up, man. I get to hang out with you two guys, talk baseball, talk development, talk life, talk meditation, whatever you guys want. So thank you first and foremost, just for having me on. This is a real treat.
Yes. We are excited to do it. So, Alan, Fitzy and I had a really cool conversation in Omaha, right around Omaha, with the Driveline guys. And I think this is a perfect part two to that conversation. And one of the things that stirs this up is you wrote a really cool article on your website. Hey, anybody, you could Google it. You could find it on Jaeger Sports. By the way, Jaeger, J-A-E-G-E-R, JaegerSports.com, called Bridging the Gap. And I want to kick us off with this, and then we'll get into the conversation. One of the reasons, you know, and I mean this with tremendous sincerity, one of the reasons I love our conversations, Alan, is because pitching is so misunderstood and these conversations get polarizing like in 3 seconds, and it's always about pitch count. And it's like, it's the most oversimplified topic ever. Like, pitch count generates these emotional reactions, which lends themselves to terrible conversations. And when we talk to people like the Driveline guys and people like yourself, now we get educated. Now we get the real dope. We get the real information. And your topic, Bridging the Gap, is so, you know, I think it's something that I just take for granted that, hey, this is the summertime and pitchers who are so specialized are about to take their, you know, the thing that they do, the craft that they're perfecting, and they're dynamic within which they're going to operate. You know, it'd be like a professional, it'd be like a golfer, it'd be like Tiger Woods, like just saying, hey, okay, for the next 3 years, I'm just going to have completely different coaches and completely different, you know, patterns and routines and those types of things. And what I'm talking about is high school kids, they're going to head into a college program. The advantage there is you picked the program, right? You, the high school player, picked the program, and you, in theory, know who your coaches are going to be. Hey, the pro thing's even more precarious because as talented as these pro coaches are, and they really are, hey, nobody gets to pick each other. You just get drafted by a team, and hey, here's your new pitching coach, and here's your new pitching coordinator, and go get them. And so, you know, I think that as we talk about this, again, the article's tremendous. Bridging the Gap came out on, I think it was the, let me see, I got it right here in the computer.
A couple weeks.
July 10th, yes. So, Alan, tell me, let's start with here. Let's start with this. Awareness is something that you've mentioned to us. You know, hey, it's two-way street, right? The player being aware of their new surroundings, the pro organization or the college program being aware of who they're taking in. And, you know, none of these people come to the party with a blank slate. We all have things that we're doing. Give us your thoughts on the awareness piece of this for starters.
Yeah, well, first of all, I have to go back to your opening, because when I wrote this article, I felt a little guilty because I'm about the people, the universal people. I didn't want this to be sort of a pro bent article. And so that's why I purposefully put really more or college and really ultimately your landing spot, because of what you just said. Whether you're going to play summer ball, which is a new format, right? You're going to a new junior college, you're going to a new four-year program, of course, you're going to professional baseball. As you said, there's so many new moving parts, right? There's so many unknowns. So I think for starters, with the word awareness, is that it's one of the most powerful words in the English vocabulary. Because I think when you're aware, both sides of it, you can have a conversation, you can communicate, you can collaborate. And if you don't have awareness, obviously, you're coming from places that maybe it's really hard to find a meeting ground. So I love the word awareness because, as you said, I want the player, you know, we want the players to be aware that, hey, even if you're at a great program like Vanderbilt or Mississippi State, you may think that that program is going to go with, the idea is that program goes with you because you've spent 3 or 4 years there ingraining it and immersing in it and becoming part of you. But to be aware that the next step you go to, as you said, they may have a different program in place, or they may have a slant more toward what they feel is going to be best for you. And it's understandable because they have a different system. So again, nothing against the others. As you said, there are countless, the pro world is just doing a great job as well. But as you said, there's maybe this disconnect. And I think people get shocked because I know from doing this for 30 years, players have gotten shocked in the past. Agents have gotten shocked in the past. Parents have gotten shocked in the past. The area scout that drafted them, even if the scouting director ultimately made the decision, area scouts have been shocked once they kind of find out that, oh, these two things didn't match up. What I watched for 3 years or 4 years, or in some cases 6 years, all of a sudden changed dramatically. And this, again, I'm not putting this on the pro world as much as I'm just saying that if the player doesn't know going into it, doesn't have that awareness that things could change. Now, here's the good news. And because I have a lot of friends now, they're either pitching coordinators or, you know, player development people. And the pro world has just, I'm going to use this word, radically shifted over the last 3 to 5 years. And it's just amazing how these two entities now are really syncing, which is wonderful. But with that said, every player is an individual. And that's a word that'll probably come up 17 more times today. This is about individuality, no matter what, whether it's a Michael Phelps or a Tiger Woods or whoever, everybody's different. So we have to be aware of that. The second part, as you said, is the awareness now from the player going into the next step, college, professional baseball. But it's also, as you said, even though these coaches are very advanced and very skilled at what they do and very receptive, they still have to be aware that maybe we need to adapt to this player more than we think. And that was the other main piece of the article, is that I was sort of making a case without real solid data for sure, but based on 30 years of being, you know, in the game, that let's face it, these kids are just, they're trained better than ever, they're developed more than ever, they're on Instagram and Twitter more than ever, they're getting free information more than ever. And so I just feel like in general, these kids are going to the next step more prepared than ever. So maybe that would be a quick way to summarize your statement about awareness.
Love it.
Yeah. And you know, Alan, you talked about just kind of the individuality piece. And this is something that I always struggle with, is if you're a pitching coach or you're a pro organization, you have your certain philosophies. How do you go about building this kind of tailored regimen so that you kind of take their history into consideration, but you still believe what you believe, right? I mean, like how do you kind of reconcile those two things?
Yeah, Aaron, it's a great question. You know, the idea of you believe what you believe is powerful because hopefully it's based on years and years of experience, right? Trial and error, right? Getting to a point where you're very confident with your system. But what trumps that still, no matter what, is the individual. So now maybe the individual needs help and needs 90% of my information as that coach. Maybe they need 70%. Maybe they need 100% because they've had no guidance. But I guess another piece going back to awareness in this article is that it first starts with major awareness of doing your research and bringing that player in. And look, I'm talking about arm care and throwing and long toss and 7-day cycles and all that, but it should be for nutrition. It should be for, you know, your sleep. It should be for a million things. But today we're talking right now about arm care and throwing and et cetera. And so if I, look, if I interviewed you guys for even 20 minutes about your throwing program, your arm care program, well, the first thing I'm going to learn right away is, man, this guy is very educated. Like, this guy's a great plan. Like, this guy's blowing me away with how much he knows and how clear he is, right? So now I got to say, okay, no matter what I believe in, maybe I'm still going to have a chance to tweak some things, and maybe there will be some bigger moves down the road. But so, Aaron, it really still comes back to, no matter what my plan is in place, even if it's as much as I've taught long toss for 30 something years, if a player comes to me and I first really listen to them well, I've got to first be able to, you know, acquiesce and listen. Now, I think here's maybe the last piece of this question, then we can get on, is this. If I do believe strongly, I don't want coaches also feeling muzzled. So it starts with listening extremely well to the player and being very open, and not listening just to maybe listen, to listen for the sake of, like, okay, we're collaborating now. And then it's fair game for the coach to say, well, look, this is what I believe strongly in, and this is what has been very successful. If you talk to someone like Scott Brown or Nate Yeske or Kirk Sarlous, you know, and Matt Hobbs, I mean, I'm going to leave out 50 other great pitching coaches. These guys have a track record. These guys have been very successful for a reason, as you said, Aaron. So I do feel like it is fair game to also share that history, of course. But I think the piece that I want to keep coming back to is, it starts with the player. It starts from listening to the player, giving them a voice, because this empowers them. And then you can move forward, even if you have great ideas that are going to also eventually really help the player.
I love that, Jay, because it's like, you know, it is, it's what you alluded to a moment ago. It's like, this is a little bit of an arranged marriage, right? Like, it's the pitching coordinator and the player did not pick each other necessarily. I mean, maybe the pitching coordinator is a little bit involved in the draft process and really liked the guy. I mean, that is possible. But so let's do this. I want to come back to the collaboration piece, because I think, you know, now we're talking about the dynamic of human communication, right? And how do we collaborate, you know, like that. I think the devil's in the details there. And so let's come back to that. But let's kind of put on the table the dangers of not doing it the right way. And I think the phrase I've heard you use is shocking the arm. And to me, that's like, hey, I have X regimen, and now I am thrown into Z regimen, and the things are not married very well. And there is danger to shocking the arm. So I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yeah, well, this is real personal with me, Runes, and Fitzy.
Yes, well played. Look at this guy's teachable and coachable.
I'm doing my best. I'm trying to be a good listener. I'm trying to practice what I preach. We did a camp for professionals starting about January 1st until basically March 1st, unless we had some early camp guys. So we had them for 2 months, and for 2 months we got to really, you know, quote unquote, buff these guys out. And then I went to spring training for probably 20 straight years. And our camp, I can't remember, camp went on for, let's say, 15, 16 years, whatever it was. So I had a hands-on experience. I lived this. I lived being with the players for 2 months. I lived where they were when they left us. I lived their mental comfort zone, their deep, deep mental, emotional, spiritual connection to their routine. And then I went to spring training. And again, this is now going maybe back to 2014, 15, because we haven't done a camp since then. So again, things have changed radically since then. But I watched this with my own eyes, because I spent almost all my time on the backfields. I just love the backfields. I love watching what's going on. And I saw guys that were routinely out between 300 and 350 feet, like rolling out of bed, like nothing. Like, that's just normal for them, like someone else throwing 60 feet. It just was how they were trained now. And maybe they were throwing up to 20, 22 minutes, whatever. They could, I hate to use the term, but you get that feeling they could throw all day. They were just beasts, like a BP pitcher kind of in a groove. You just got that feeling. And I know, because we lived it for so many years. And I saw them go to backfields. And on day one, there was a 10-minute program, right, which, this is shout out Andy McKay, 10 minutes, a 10 minute program is 5 minutes per player. And then I added one more piece. It's really 3.5 minutes per player, because the ball is in the air for a period of time and you have to catch the ball and then you have to exchange it, and you might talk to your buddy next to you for a few seconds too. So it's maybe 3.5 minutes per person. So I saw our guys that had all day to throw, right? No, literally no boundaries, to go into a 10-minute program. I saw many organizations back in the day, and again, this has radically changed. Guys were not allowed to go past 120 feet, maybe 180 feet. Now think about that. That's 50% of the range of motion, flexibility, volume, endurance they were building with us. I would call that life in the arm is now reduced by 50%, or conditioning, whatever term you want to use. And so, yeah, so I saw this firsthand, this shocking of the arm. And unfortunately, it's dramatically affected a large number of players we trained. And it wasn't just players we trained, it was players that came out of some of these other schools that I knew were long tossing and doing a lot more throwing. I talked to people from Japan. I talked to players from the Dominican. I'll talk to anybody that's willing to talk about what they've done and where things are at. And I can't emphasize this enough, as much of a damage it is to the physical deconditioning of the arm and the vulnerability of putting the arm in harm's way, it's probably more mental. If I told you today, let's say you went out and ran a mile a day and you stretched your legs a certain way, and I said, Rune, sorry, but today you can't stretch your hamstrings or your quads or your calves, nothing, you're gonna go out cold. You kind of look at me like, you know, come on, I need that. First of all, I might tear my hammy if I do that. Secondly, it's just, well, firstly, it's back to, there's a comfort zone with how you feel mentally, emotionally. It's your routine. It's as simple as that. It's what makes you feel good and you know it. And then to have that take, not a little taken away, we're talking sort of almost polar opposite effects. So that is really where you could say a lot of this oomph comes from me and all of us at Jaeger Sports. And then everybody out there, the Drivelines of the world, the Wolfhorse of the world, the Randy Sullivans of the world, the Eric Kreskes of the world, you know, to me, this is where this comes from, is because we've witnessed this shock to the arm. And unfortunately, that shock has had a career ending. You know, I could say career threatening to a number of players, but it's had career ending ramifications. So that one hurts a lot. And I've lived that. And I've lived that for 20 plus years. So sorry for the long answer, but in a way, you know, that's really where the shocking of the arm. Look, I've lived this like deeply experientially. I'm talking research, like I said, I was a spring training more than once, probably for 3 to 4 weeks. You know, I lived at the Krawczyk's house, as you know, for probably 10 or 12 of those years. And I couldn't have been in a better spot in, you know, downtown Phoenix or downtown Scottsdale. But the shocking of the arm runes, yes, it's a shocking of the system. That's the concern.
Got it.
And one of the things that you talk about in your article, and I hope I'm not jumping ahead too much here, Alan, but I mean, you know, these players in college, if you're used to being, you're thrown every 7 days, right? I mean, that's just what you've done throughout your college career, high school, and all of a sudden you're trying to adjust to this new, you know, 5-day routine or whatever. You know, I'm just really curious about how you recommend players kind of transition into pro ball from that standpoint, as far as, you know, not shocking the system by scaling from a 7-day to 5-day. It feels like another way of what we're talking about here of dramatically altering your routine in a way that could really be harmful if you do it too abruptly. I mean, what's the proper way to transition, do you think? And I mean, we can talk more about the you know, the ideal length of a throwing cycle later, but what do you think is the first step is how do you transition from 7-day? What do you kind of recommend here? You touched on in your article some.
Yeah, number one, Aaron, I just want guys to stay on a 7-day for that first short season, especially if they sign early enough. I it seems like nowadays guys may not even pitch much in the short season, and maybe it's something that happens more in instructional league. Maybe they can create a new instructional league where they can just keep guys on a 7-day. Because for me, one of the benefits of a 7 and even a 6-day rotation is you can get healthier and stronger and more durable because of that extra day or two. But look, just back to this whole idea of shocking the arm. You know, we talked earlier, Rune's opening about the familiarity of where you've come from. I mean, this all comes together now. So keep them on a 7-day. I would almost say keep them on a 7-day through their first season. As we know nowadays, I believe in the minor leagues, maybe across the board, you know, they have a built-in off day now. So everybody's at least on a 6-day. So we're already close. But if nothing else, just the 7th day, whether it's that first short season, whether it's a good chunk of instructional ball, or maybe for guys that go stay in extended spring, because now the, you know, the contraction, there's not as many teams. So maybe you have more guys at your complex. So these are all areas to keep that 7-day going. And number one, it first of all, it gives the player immediate comfort zone. Like, hey, I get to keep doing what I've been doing, knowing I'm working. And this is where the team can collaborate with you and give you guidance. Like, hey, we are moving to a 6, but let's at least keep you comfortable, keep you in your training regimen. Let us learn about your 7-day and how that works. That's going to help us adjust to your 6-day. But short answer, Aaron, is keep them on a 7-day, at least a short season, at least like a 3-month period. So everybody can go to school and everybody, by the way, that's a great time where everybody can communicate and collaborate and start, you know, strategizing for the next cycle, which is going to be eventually a 6-day.
Hey, Alan, I want to come back to the communication piece, because I think that's the ultimate takeaway for players and coaches is, okay, this is super logical to me, but now what do I do about it? How do I make sure the collaboration is as efficient, or maybe effective is a better word, as effective as possible? But I want to let's kind of take the last point and do it now. So it sounds like you like the 6-day rotation. Do you like that for like big leaguers too? Do you think that makes more sense than, yeah, I'd be curious your take. Cause again, it is, Fitzy's making a great point here. It's like, hey, the difference between a 7-day rotation, you know, pitching every 7 days or once a week versus every 5th day, that's pretty massive. And yeah, and as quickly as kids are getting to the big leagues now, that's a lot of real estate to cover in a small amount of time. So tell us about why you're convicted on the 6-day.
Oh, goodness. In the article, I used the word disproportionate. I was trying to think of like a bigger word, you know, a more profound effect on people to try to really understand this. Because everybody's like, well, what's 1 extra day from a 5 to a 6 day? And I'll just use the word profound. The 1 extra day puts into motion several massive benefits. Like that's sort of trying, that's over the top. But I want people to get that. That 1 day changes the whole psychology, the whole physiology of the system. So I'll try to do it briefly so we can get to other things. When you're on a 5-day, okay, and again, we talked about how the 7-day and the 6-day is close enough. You know, I feel really good about that, especially if you have that first season to go 7-day to 6-day. I feel like a 6-day is great. It works. The difference between the 5 and the 6-day, though, is a different animal. And by the way, you make a great point about these kids that are getting to the big leagues faster. So that's 7 to 5 days happening faster. And that to me is a concern. It's a big concern. The reason I love the 6-day is that if you, we'll just use Sunday as the start day, okay, to just try to keep this simple. So on a 5-day, you have your next day Monday, your next day Tuesday. Now some teams, hopefully less and less are doing it, but we're really for day 3, which would be Wednesday as your side day. Okay, so Sunday start, Monday, Tuesday are sort of your recovery rebuild days. And then Wednesday is still now a recovery rebuild, but it's actually a training day right before your bullpen. So you actually have 3 days to rebuild and recover, which is what we love. We don't like the pen on day 2. In our opinion, you're still recovering. I've used this analogy a million times. If the 3 of us went out and played tackle football today, oh boy, we're not going to be really sore tomorrow, maybe some. We're going to be really sore in 2 days. So that to me is not the day to have a guy on a mound trying to work on things, even if you get an extra day afterward before his start. I get that. You buy a day after it. But I use the analogy, yeah, but if you're already limping a lot, how good is that extra day? So we want guys on day 3. Now, if you go to a 6-day, you can still keep that day 3 where a guy has this mentality now that after my start on Sunday, man, I get Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Well, listen to this. Now we're going to give you Thursday. So when you wake up Monday morning, you're like, oh, even if I threw 110 pitches last night, and I only go out to 100, 120 feet today, well, tomorrow I'm going to start feeling good and I'm going to be out to maybe 200, 240, 250, but I can stay out there for a little while and kind of baby my arm and not baby it, but condition it, get some volume, get some conditioning. I don't even have to pull down or do anything aggressive. I can just chill. Now, day three, you're starting to your bullpen yet. Now, if you had a bullpen that day, we still have 2 days, by the way, after your pen to recover and rebuild for your start day. But I want to go to day four now. So now on day three, Wednesday, now you get a full long toss in. You can pull down a little bit. You don't have to pull down. Now on day four, man, you're brand new. I mean, you're an animal. Now you can stretch it out and long toss pretty well. You can pull down somewhat, but you know you're going to be pulling down in your bullpen. My point is this, you are so rebuilt so well that the bullpen has such a minor effect on you that you wake up on day five feeling really, really fresh. And so then you have your start, which is day six. So you still have the next day and the day after like you would on a 5 day. Now, in a perfect world, you could say, well, if we backed it up 1 day and we kept it on Monday, Tuesday, if we kept it on Wednesday, well, now I have 2 days to recover and rebuild from my start. You can do it either way. Here's my point. The psychology of it and the physiology of it is off the charts compared to 5 day. You wake up knowing you have this luxury and this freedom to recover and rebuild at your own pace, to do it right. You're actually training and conditioning during the season. Imagine that. Can you imagine you're actually feeling healthier and stronger on your start day 6 days from now versus you're limping a little bit. Now you might say Max Scherzer pulls this off and he has no problem every fifth day. And that's great. I would still argue that Max Scherzer might be at 34 to 40, who he is from 28 to 34, right? And we don't know this, but maybe Max Scherzer, not that he needs more velocity, but maybe he's 99 to 102 instead of 96 to 98 when he's 24 to 28. I'm not so worried about the velocity, of course. So I would say that whatever way you go on a 6 day, I think the most ideal way is, of course, as you go, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, gives you 3 days to recover and rebuild and then side. And then you can go Thursday, Friday, again, recover, rebuild, set up Saturday for your start day again. It's magic, man. The only thing I can say is like, you could feel like your wave is gaining momentum and energy through, imagine this thought. You're getting stronger and healthier throughout the season. So that's why I think everybody, I know there's financial considerations. I know there's the thought of, well, your number one and two are not going to get as many starts. I understand that. But here, I had a great talk with Andy McKay about this the other day. What if though, because you enable these kids on 7 days to go to a 6 day, first go to a 7 day properly, then transition to a 6 day. My theory is this, you'd have a bunch of 38th to 40th round picks, or nowadays it's 18th to 20th round picks, become first to third round picks. So now all of a sudden, you've got a plethora of what you thought you only had, you had one or two, you had a few two, threes and fours, and maybe a bunch of fives and sixes. Well, and people are gonna say, well, prove this, but I'm saying, this is 30 years of strong experience and instincts. If you all of a sudden have a few more ones and twos and a bunch more threes and fours and a plethora, just a ton of fives and sixes, you got trade bait. Mm-hmm. I mean, your draft now, whether you get a first, imagine this, you're taking a 15th round kid that all of a sudden in the back of your mind, you're thinking this kid might be a second or third rounder in a couple of years from now. So the financial consideration, sorry, the not getting your ones and twos. Look, the reality of it is the first month of the season, they skip a day anyway. So you're not losing a start for at least a whole month of your ones, twos, and threes, or your whole five-man rotation. Maybe nowadays it almost seems like 2 months that you're, so what are we really talking about? You're missing a start a couple of times a month. I don't know what the numbers are. I actually did the numbers, but anyway, yes.
This is a little bit of a tangent, Alan, but I am curious about this. Something we talked about with Driveline a little bit a couple weeks ago. I'm curious for your take. You talk about, you know, the bullpen day and maybe the optimal time for bullpen day, but what's your opinion of, you know, teams, when they get into the postseason, college teams, you'll see them sometimes bring a guy back on, you know, what, a day of rest or 2 days of rest or whatever. And they'll say, well, it's his bullpen day. You know, I mean, so he's going to throw a bullpen anyway. So we put him out there for an inning or two innings or seven innings or, you know, whatever. What's your take on that kind of rationale that we see, I think, too often from college coaches?
You mean that they're going to use their bullpen day in the game?
Right. In like a regional game, we're talking about like a Monday of a regional.
Well, to me, I would still come back and ask the question of this. What is their training cycle like?
Yeah.
If their training cycle is such that, well, first of all, if Monday is the last time they're going to pitch for 6 or 7 days, well, we know we have a reprieve coming. I think your question, Aaron, might go more toward your midweek game, right? Because now you've got your starter on Friday, his bullpen day is on Tuesday. That to me is more of a concern, because at least the Monday on a regional game, if it is his bullpen day, I don't see any issue with it in inning if he's going to, you know, especially on a 7 day, you have enough rest and rebuild to where your bullpen day, you should be pretty strong, right? I mean, you should be able to get after it a bit. So I'm okay with, you know, maybe that's a little trickier with the end of the article. I talk about piggybacking starting pitching. So maybe I'd be more concerned about the fact that he didn't do his normal pregame throwing and long toss and the amount of time he needs. And I'd be way more concerned about that as a shock to the arm, right? You know, going down to the bullpen in the eighth inning when he's used to going out to, let's say, 300 or 330 feet before the game, and he's getting 60 to 80 feet maybe with the right fielder. I'd be more concerned. But using that same questionnaire more to midweek during the season, I have a big concern more with that because, well, first of all, the shocking of the arm, not doing your normal routine, that's number one. But number two, I want a pitcher to have a mentality of like, I start on Friday, right? I do this on Saturday. I do this on Sunday. I do this on Monday. I do this on Tuesday. And I don't want to deviate from that. Not unless it's very, very unusual. Maybe if it's the Tuesday midweek game going into the last week of the season and you're playing Mississippi State, and if you win that game, your RPI is going to go high enough to where you think you might get into the tournament. Again, I'm always going to default to health, right? So my main concern still is about, is that game still that important compared to hurting this kid? Because I can't stand, well, let me say that in a more politically correct way. It really bothers me, this idea of bringing a starter into a game mid-game on any level. Look, we could break this down any way you guys want. I wrote this in the article in that sidebar on piggybacking. If I'm used to going out to 300 feet before my game and throwing for 21 minutes, right? I have a system in place before I go take the bullpen mound, before the main mound. There's a physiological connection. There's a mental connection. There's an intuitive sense of protecting my body and doing what's best for my body. And now you're telling me, and I know it's only one inning, and these kids are young, and for the most part, they're supple enough and they're healthy enough. I still come from the point of view, is it worth it? Is at the end of the day, you're taking a kid, it goes back to Runes' opening, right? These are totally foreign areas we're talking about. I know it doesn't seem like that big of a deal to bring the center fielder in and close out an inning, right? It's not that big a deal that my Friday guy that's a horse, I'm bringing him in on Tuesday or Monday at the regional because it's only one inning. Yes, and for the most part, chances are nothing's going to come of it. You could probably say yes. But if that starts either the beginning of a teardown of an arm or hurts that kid, is it ever worth it? So to me, it's 100%. Unless it's the kid, maybe if it's the kid's last inning, he doesn't really care about playing at the next level. You know, he says, coach, look, I don't care. I'll blow out my arm right now because my career is over and I don't care about having surgery at the end of the season. So I'm sorry for the long answer, but I really do feel like, first of all, I am really glad you brought that up because I think that's one of the real nuances in the game that is not talked about. And I'm glad we're talking about it because it is a big deal. And I hope all coaches that are listening to this know And it's not as simple as I'm just putting my guy in for an inning. Now, I've talked to people like in my article, I say in pro ball, if you're doing this in spring training or you're doing this at the complex and you could take someone to a side field, you could bring a guy in anytime you want, right? I remember back in the day, a pitcher that we worked with who was just known for having a very thorough pregame program. I'm thinking, why would you do it to him of all people? But anyway, they were bringing him in mid-game. But it was during spring training. It was beautiful. He went to a side field, freaking aired it out, did his thing. So you have a side field. Or I guess if you're, you know, at a regional and it's your home and you can sneak your guy off somewhere by a training field, absolutely no problem.
Guys, that's a great point I hadn't thought about, is the long toss in him in. Yeah, that's just, boy, that's fascinating. Hey, Alan, let's get to that final point about communication, collaboration. I'm gonna say the way I view it, and I want you to just kind of steer me in a better direction or take this wherever you want. So I think the two people collaborating clearly are the adult, the coach, the pitching coordinator, whoever it's gonna be, and the athlete, you know, the pitcher. And the tricky part for the pitching coordinator is he's got to collaborate with this individual pitcher, but then he's got to get all of his pitching coaches that could potentially work with this kid in his minor league career. He's got to get all those people, you know, rowing in the same direction and speaking the same language. So I'm always going to put the onus on the adult. I'm always going to put the onus on the coach that, hey, as an adult, I should be a better communicator and collaborator than an 18-year-old kid or a 20-year-old kid. Yeah. But now the kid's got to take, you know, it's their career too. So like they have to take an active, they have to be an active participant here. And I think if you're the player, you can't just show up with your routine and expect everybody to just kind of get out of your way. I think you have to be able, and I think that's the point of this, you got to be able to speak to it. And the two things that come up for me, Jay, and I want you to take it again, wherever you want, but if I'm a coach, I've spent my life studying this craft. You know, I've been in a million conversations. I've developed very strong opinions. Most of these guys were pitchers at this level, if not higher. So of course I've got very deep-seated beliefs. So if I'm going to go into this conversation with the athlete and I'm going to be open-minded, there's two things I need to hear from the athlete. So first of all, let me make it a third. I want to know what you believe. What is your routine? Tell me what it is. Yeah. I want you to tell me why it is that. Yeah. And I want you to tell me your journey. Like, how did you arrive there? So kind of the what, the why, and the how do we get there? Is if you don't give me those three things, I don't know. You make it really hard for me to collaborate with you. Do you feel like that's kind of in the ballpark, or am I missing some major things?
1,000,000%. I think the key word you said there is onus, Bruins. The onus is on the adult. And even if you have strong beliefs, and this is where the game has changed so much for the better. These coaches nowadays, individuality, athleticism, they're curious. They're bringing the players in, and yes, they're looking for information, as opposed to, I feel like back in the day, it really was more about implementing what they felt was best, or the organization felt was best, or the organization had a policy, you know? So that's what they pretty much wanted their players to do. And I feel like now it has changed profoundly, which is great. With that said, the onus is still on the organization or the pitching coordinator or whoever to sit down with each player and say exactly what you just said. You know, give me the how, the why. What was the third one? Uh-oh, check your notes. No, just
yeah,
kidding.
No, I muted myself. So yeah, to me, it's like, tell me what your routine is. Yes. Tell me why it is, you know, tell me what the rationale behind it is. And right. Then, you know, I, at least for me, I'd like to know the history. Like, I'd like to know, before I recommend something, maybe you've already tried that and failed. So, you know, almost like a doctor with, you know, how they get to a second line treatment. You know, I would like to know how we arrived to the current state.
Right. So the what, why, and how. So the onus to me is on the organization. As much as I want the onus to also be on the player, because we're talking collaboration, but it starts with the adult, as you said. I'm going to steal your term, which I like. And the onus is on them to bring in their new player, right? And sit down, and maybe they have all the pitching coaches in the room, but regardless, you sit down with the pitching coordinator and you're curious. Like, I love this word, curious. You're just curious, how did you get here? What's your history? How did you arrive here? I love that. Because once you do that, well, number one, if the person can come out and just firing with like these things off the chart, like backing you off, like, oh my God, we can pretty much leave this guy alone. I mean, you know, we're still here to offer some ideas and teach him some things that are about pro ball that he's not aware of yet. But you find out the flip side. You also find out the player that's like, not a lot of history here. I feel a lot more confident about, we may need to really kind of, you know, gently, you know, bring him our ideas. And in that case, the player probably is welcoming it too. So you gauge, you know, their history. You also gauge their receptivity, because if a player feels convicted about what they've done, right or wrong, if they are convicted, you know, you got to give that player space. Now, if he doesn't do well, obviously you have a window to jump in there. But that's the other reason I love talking, is because you have to gauge their conviction. Now, you may have someone that doesn't have that much conviction. You're like, great, this is someone we can, you know, really give a lot of our knowledge to. Where the onus is on the player, Ruins, I agree with you, but here's been my experience. And you guys will both relate to this. An 18-year-old or a 21-year-old even showing up, it's spring training and you're around a Cy Young Award winner, you're around authority figures, you're around maybe the strength and conditioning coach worked under Dr. James Andrews, right? So, you know, you're around people that have, you know, quite a bit of credentials. Not to mention there's a logo, right? Detroit Tigers, right? LA Dodgers. So that alone is sort of, I think, puts you sort of, backs you off. And not to mention just in life, right? We respect our elders, we respect our teachers, we respect coaches that just drafted us. And so I would almost say that there's sort of a built-in sense of maybe backing off too much, even if you're a convicted pitcher, because of what I just said. So that's where I feel like not only is the adult need to take charge here, but the adult, the organization or the coach at the university or even the high school coach, it doesn't matter. You all need to find out your player's history and have a deep dive with them and communicate and collaborate. And then, as you said, going forward, now you have a plan, and the plan may be we can really lay off this guy, and the plan for somebody else may be, hey, we really need to come forward and give this guy a lot of direction. But I do feel like the onus for sure is on the organization first to really look. Last thing I'll say, and then we move on, is this. I wrote also in the article words to me that are very, very important, as we all know, listening well, empowering kids, giving kids a voice. If you do that for a kid, the first day you meet them, they're going to go through a wall. The trust factor that is built in instantly, just by you sitting down, even if you want to give them your ideas at some point, but if the opening, that first impression is like, hey, I'm open, I'm listening, I really want to hear what you have to say. I want you to feel empowered. I want you to know you have a voice. I want you to know you're being heard. Man, you talk about going forward and having great collaboration as a result of that. So that to me is where this whole thing is starting to get to the crux of everything, is this whole, in the article I've joked with other people about it. I wrote all these things about 7 day and 6 day and 5 day and shock in the arm. And I think really at the end of the day, a lot of this article comes down to awareness and communication and collaboration.
Yeah, I think that's genius, because I've always had this fear, Jay, that like when I see a kid that I perceive to be kind of a people pleaser, which would be me, right? Like that's me. I love getting along with people. I'm the guy that if I had signed professionally, I would have been blown away by the logo, and you know, they would have been telling me to throw left hand, and I would have for sure been trying it. You know, it's, and that is a formula for train wreck, right? So I think that was a light bulb that went off for me when you were just speaking there. Is, and again, I'm putting a lot on the pitching coordinator, which is maybe unfair, but these, as you know, these are really talented people. But it is like, if you see a kid that you sense that in them, that, hey, like, don't let us just tell you everything. Like, you know, we want you to push back when you feel something uncomfortable. We want, you know, I think it's, as much as giving space to the convicted, stubborn player, stubborn in a good way, is important. I think we also need to help the person that's less convicted gain conviction, right? Like that, because that person's got, you know, some pitfalls ahead of them as well. Man.
Yeah, and just one other quick note, Runes. The pitching nowadays, as you know, I mean, they have tons and tons of meetings constantly. There's tons and tons of data, research, analytics going on, right? You guys know after every game, you know, they phone in or email in, you know, their scouting report on the game. So I don't want to, because the pitching coordinator, we all know, man, those guys, they are so busy. They have so much on their plate. And maybe, you know, it's an assistant pitching coordinator's job to do. But after that initial meeting and you take all the notes, you know, you just put that in an email, you know, or you can even do a Zoom call with all your pitching coaches. There's not that many, right? There might, including your strength and conditioning guys, right? And your PTs, just get them all on the call. Look, they do all this pre-draft, right? So they have all these meetings to get the right guy in their minds. So now you have the right guy and you have a deep conversation with your pitching coordinator or your player development guy. It's just the next step. It might take an extra, you know, bit of time to do it, but this is your player. So
yep. Totally agree. That's awesome. Hey, Alan, so let's do this. I'm going to stop us here. I'll tell you one part of the conversation we didn't get to that I want to propose as a part two to this is the relief pitcher. I just think this whole relief pitcher thing is so misunderstood by me. It's so like, it's never talked about. We always talk about starting pitchers. And we just never talk about relievers. And we're in an era in baseball when relievers have never been more important. They've never been more prevalent. They've never thrown more innings. They've never thrown more pitches. They're more unique than they've ever been. So if you're cool with it, Jay, let's do that. Let's hold off on the relief pitcher as a part two. And again, I'm going to kind of put this on my list too. Like we just, these conversations about pitching and arm care, they're just always revelations for me. They're so important to the future of our game. And I enjoy them so much. We just got to kind of keep doing them. And of course, you know, talking to our friends at Driveline, we're so appreciative of them. Talking to someone like you who, you know, I would have fun talking to you about any topic, but especially about pitching. It is awesome. So this has been beautiful. I as I expected, really appreciate it. Thanks for everything you're doing for the game, you know, continued success with all that stuff. And we'll do a part two, if you will.
Yeah, and I just really want to thank you and Aaron and D1 Baseball and everybody, because to me, we're all out there doing the same thing. We're all just trying to advance the game. We're all trying to help the kids optimize their future. And I'll leave you on this note. You know, I know we've talked a lot about the shocking and what have you in the past, but, you know, the past is the past. And the good news is that it's such a pleasure to know that, and it's a relief in a way to know now that the game at the professional level, obviously the other levels too, has just gotten significantly better on the development side. And I feel like as important as this article is, it's way less relevant than it was even 5 years ago. It's still relevant, of course, but I can't thank you guys again for doing this with me. On a personal note, I love you guys. You're awesome. I always enjoy it. We go back a long way. So it's great to reconnect.
You're the best, love Alan. Thanks for the best discussion. Really enjoyed it as always.
Yes. All right, guys. Bridging the Gap is the article, people. Look it up. JaegerSports.com. Bridging the Gap, July 10th. Again, thanks to our listeners. Really enjoyed this conversation. And we will talk to you all next week. Have a good one.